And welcome to the Flower Hour, your first ever botanist podcast. I'm here with Dan the Flowered Ford, and I am Mitch Pumpkin. Just kidding, welcome to the Flower Hour, everybody.
I gotta ask a question. You do realize, like, pumpkins aren't flowers, right? You are aware.
They come from a vine, so they're in that category. And that's the only thing. That's the only thing. Mitch Pumpernickel, is that a flower? I don't know flowers, man. Come on.
Pumpernickel's bread, isn't it?
Does it come from a seed or something? I don't know, man. It's a plant. The plant hour, whatever. I'm improvising here, man. You know, this wouldn't happen in the Upright Citizens Brigade. They wouldn't just interrupt. And go, that joke doesn't work. You just keep rolling, Dan.
Actually, you should watch. Ian Roberts does that all the time. Like, Ian Roberts is the master of just going, nah, fuck you. Shut it down.
My favorite improv, this will segue into quick hits real quick. My favorite improv actor ever is Michael Scott on The Office, where he just kept pulling out a gun and pretending to be an undercover secret agent. It's one of the most cringe scenes I've ever seen in my life. I love it. So awkward. And Dan, that's going to jump me into quick hits. Here's our first story. NBC and Fox look to be interested in revitalizing some old shows. Fox may be interested in bringing back King of the Hill. NBC's looking at bringing back ER, 30 Rock, and The Office. Are any of these a good idea?
I mean, history has shown no. Like, you let sleeping dogs lie. Yeah. Like, no matter how good a show was, there's a reason you closed it down.
There's a reason
you finished it up.
You pimp it out in like a mini series or a movie because it's lower cost and you can film everything at once a lot easier. And then if it sucks, it's like, well, it's the movie. Who cares? And if it was good, it was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then maybe you go from there. But that's the best.
There is an exception for animated shows. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Family Guy was a much bigger hit the second time around.
Futurama
the first time.
Had the return.
And the one big like live action TV show that came back from the dead would probably be what, Doctor Who? Like, is that the big success story?
Currently, Top Gear? I mean, I don't know if it's a big success, but you know, you got Twin Peaks, which has been a critical success. So like the fans like
Twin Peaks isn't watched by as many people as it was the first go around.
To be fair,
it does seem like
a completely different tier of television. It went from free to ultra premium. But as been successful with the fans, and obviously those shows draw from a larger fan base, I think King of the Hill and ER could work. Who cares?
ER is the dumber idea because, like, just make a new fucking hospital show. Like, they're not that.
I don't think ER is that beloved.
I don't think anybody has some, like, huge attachment to the characters on ER. It's like, oh man, I gotta know what the one that's, like, what's Noah Wiley?
Yeah, because like ER is now known for like they killed one character with a helicopter crash, which is awesome, and like George Clooney was on it. That's everything everyone knows about ER.
I don't even think anybody remembers Noah Wiley, except me and all the other big fans of The Librarian.
Dan, this comes across our news feed as we record right now. NBC is planning a Munsters reboot. Seth Meyers, Mike Schumacher, and Jill Kargman are bringing the Monster Family back to television with a new twist. I don't know what the twist is.
I mean, that show wasn't exactly like the greatest show in the history of the world the first go around.
That's a good team around it. I don't hate that, I guess.
Well, here's the problem with that idea is that the thing that kind of made the Munsters work is that those Universal Picture monster movies had been such huge hits.
Yeah, like in the early days,
like, within
TV, they were everywhere because they were like cheap as shit to play.
Yeah, they were like these huge movie hits in like the 30s or whatever. And then they were like the first things that were on TV all the time was the monster movies.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, they'd just be on. Like, you'd turn on a TV somewhere, like, on a Saturday evening, and, like, The Invisible Man.
You know, Dan, I always see, like, I'm not a big fan of the series, but, like, why not do Harry Potter? Do a show about a family of witches, a sitcom. Like, that might.
Yeah, like some kind of spinoff thing.
Yeah, no, it doesn't have to be related to Harry Potter. Just have it be about, like, people like witches and that kind of shit's popular with people.
Well, just within the Harry Potter universe.
Yeah, you don't have to do that. Who cares? And like Rick and Morty's kind of like Harry Potter, but with science, you know?
That is the weirdest comparison I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah. All right, Dan. no other big stories. It was the first night of NFL preseason. I don't think you saw much of it. My quick recap time to overreact about everything. Everyone sucks. My team sucks. And the world's going to end.
Atlanta didn't have a great first preseason game, did they?
Well, and lots of fans are freaking out. Like the kid that Chicago took from UNC, he's a bust now because he didn't lead a fourth quarter comeback against the Broncos. Lots of people blowing a gasket. But that's what preseason is all about. It's all about just being ridiculous and getting your hot takes out of the way. You know, even for the fans, we got to work some rust off. You know, it's tough.
The sooner you get the hot take out there, the better you'll look when it proves true. So you gotta fire them as soon as possible.
That's the thing people forget. But you know what people don't forget? They don't forget that we're going to have Rob the Nerd on to preview the Big Ten. So let's jump to that, Dan.
Good enough.
All right. And welcome to the Power Hours Big Ten Preview. Thanks for throwing that to me, Zachary and Dan. I've got Dan here. I've got Rob the Nerd. And we're here to break down the Big Ten. So welcome, Rob.
How's it going, guys?
It is always a pleasure to be talking to the great Rob the Nerd, our favorite Ohioan on this podcast.
So I think the
probably
first
the
thing
only
to point
Ohioan
out,
on the yeah. podcast.
We have tons of Ohioans listening. We don't alienate any of them.
Fair enough.
It's our seventh biggest market, tied with the other seven states for zero.
Strangely enough, we are the number one podcast in Alaska. So
yes,
you know, we've all got our skills.
But I want to start with the Big Ten, and I want to start, Rob, I want you to kind of just tell us about the Big Ten this year. Give us kind of like the grand picture after last year with the big Ohio State, Michigan battle, Penn State coming out of nowhere, beginning the healing. What's the state of the Big Ten going into 2017 now in this season?
The way I look at it is really, it's very similar, I feel, to how last year ended up shaping up. It's just a couple of different players ended up towards the top. I think that one of the biggest stories, and I know we'll touch on this at some point, was just, you know, I believe that last year that, you know, it's going to be really top heavy, especially on the East, with Ohio State, Michigan, and Michigan State. And Michigan State, you know, just fell off the face of the earth, you know. So it's kind of a dynamic of whether Penn State is now to a point where they're going to surpass Michigan State as that third possible contender coming out of the East. But you still look at the Big Ten West, and it's kind of a sea of, you know, kind of mediocre to okay teams with, you know, Wisconsin and Nebraska, you know, Iowa. We'll see what, you know, Fleck can do at Minnesota. And a lot of the teams that even Ohio State, Michigan, they're going through and they're replacing a lot of key talent, especially on defense for both squads. So it's, to me, it looks like it's the similar picture that you normally get where, you know, your champion's probably going to come out of whoever wins the East, and then it's just kind of a dogfight of mediocrity in the West just to see who will eventually end up losing that championship game.
Well, I don't let's just start with this team because we're going to kind of look at every team. I want to start with Penn State, and how much of that kind of feels like Penn State took advantage of, like, maybe Ohio State not being exactly right at quarterback and offensive line? Or how much more of that was Penn State maybe earning what they got with the Big Ten championship last year? Was it circumstance, or was it something Penn State did to you, Rob? What do you think? As an Ohio State fan, too.
Well, first of all, that game was painful for me on many levels, especially because, as you know, I've made it very clear on this. I am a Penn State hater, and I am unapologetic about that. I hate your program. I hate your school. I hate your city. I hate your stadium. It's just, if North Korea is going to nuke us, you know, I would suggest really the whole state of Pennsylvania, you know, take out the Penguins too while you're at it. Do me a favor. But honestly, going into the Penn State game, I was worried last year. Happy Valley is a tough place to play. They have their little whiteout thing, you know, which I don't think is really that intimidating as far as an on-the-field kind of a thing, but I think it is something that really riles their fans up. And you know, it's Ohio State. It's a pseudo-rivalry game with them.
We talked about that last year, but, like, that Penn State-Ohio State rivalry is kind of one-sided in that it feels like the Penn State people care about it much more than Ohio State.
Yes, and I'm not withstanding. Yeah, and I would certainly agree that majority of people do feel that way. I to answer your original question, as I kind of go through on my little tirade here, leading into that game last year, and a lot of people don't remember this, is that Ohio State had a very tough road game at Wisconsin that went into overtime the week prior. That was a very emotional game and kind of seemed to be the start of a lot of the struggles with especially the passing game with the OSU offense. But that being said, I think that Penn State, you know, they were better than a lot of people gave them credit for. I do think their running back is probably the top running back in the conference. He is just, and especially in that second half of the season, was just especially beastly and tearing through a lot of the defenses. I kind of look at it that the win against Ohio State kind of gave them the confidence to go through and push forward through that second half of the season, to where if they didn't go through and they didn't win that game, especially in the dramatic fashion that they did, I don't know if they would necessarily have had the same momentum that would have carried them to the championship game and then eventually to the Rose Bowl where they ended up losing the USC. This year, I don't see them sneaking up on as many people. I think that part of it was, and I certainly did as well, kind of underestimating Penn State a little bit. I know that the beginning of the season, some people were talking about Franklin's seat warming up a little bit, kind of wondering what general direction the Penn State program was going to go after the, you know, Sandusky and Paterno scandals and you know, after O'Brien's brief stint there. I really kind of look at them as possibly being the second or third best team out of the East this year. I do think that they have some weapons on offense. It's just whether or not they can get a passing game going consistently enough, because so many people are going to be so concentrated on stopping the running back that, you know, will the defense hold up? Will they be able to carry that same momentum? Will they take teams by surprise? Penn State's going to be a team that a lot of lesser opponents are going to be a little bit more amped up for this year. So I'm kind of curious to see how they go for and how that's addressed.
Yeah, how are they going to handle things with the target on their back? And I think another thing to keep in mind with Penn State right now, like they're like sixth in the polls right now. That puts them in position to be a playoff team, you know, if some things break their way. So there's a lot more pressure, I think, on Penn State this year than, like you said, than last year, when they did kind of be able to, they were able to kind of come out of nowhere because no one kind of saw it coming.
And if you look at James Franklin's coaching history, and I'm an unabashed James Franklin fan. And I loved last year because I watched like all these dumbass Penn State fans who were like, "We gotta get a different coach. This one's Malata. He don't know how to do it." I loved them like having to go, "Oh, wait a minute. You mean he is good?" But the problem with Penn State is that last year their passing offense was so reliant on hitting deep shots down the field. They were basically chucking, and they hit such a high percentage of deep balls. Look, obviously some of that is good coaching, some of that is good system, but some of that's luck. I have a hard time believing they're going to be as successful on those deep shots as they were last year. I have a hard time believing that. And if they're not, can they build a passing game and can they build an offense around something that's a little bit more consistent to give Barkley the help he needs to be able to have those. Because that's part of why Barkley was so successful. Is, you know, Penn State would hit, like, these huge deep shots, and it would force safeties back, no matter how good Barkley was, that they'd have to respect that deep ball. If they're not hitting that crazy high percentage of deep shots, are they going to still be able to keep those safeties back? That's a question I have, and I think they're gonna be clearly the class of the second tier of the Big Ten, but I don't expect them to beat Ohio State again. That's for sure. And I don't expect, I mean, look, Michigan, even last year when they had a magical season, Michigan beat them like a rented mule. So, like, I'm not seeing anything to suggest that will change.
No, and, you know, Dan, I'm kind of flipping through Penn State's schedule right now, and it's not the hardest schedule in the world. This is the team that could probably start off, realistically, maybe 5-1, 6-0.
Well, they got to beat Penn State, which they didn't – or Pitt, they got to beat Pitt, which they didn't do last year.
Yeah, which they didn't lie, but I think Pitt will take a step down this year. But, you know, this is a team that could start well, but – speaks back to kind of what Rob said. There's a target on their back, and, you know, schools like Indiana are going to be looking at them. Iowa's going to be coming hard at them.
Indiana's going to be crap this year. I don't want to get ahead of schedule. Indiana's going to be a joke.
Teams that maybe wouldn't get up for this game that do, Dan, and I think in college football, any other brand of football, emotion's really important, and sometimes getting up for a big game can change everything.
No emotion can save you from Frank DeBoard.
Well, I believe there's a team in Ann Arbor that lost to a team that was much, you know, much worse than them.
Yeah, DeBoard was their offensive coordinator in that game. So,
well,
I'm just
saying,
emotion matters. You can't be a robot like Dan with your numbers and your math. And I think
you can.
I'm gonna
stop. And it's Mike DeBoard. I'm sorry, I got him confused with Frank DeFord for a little bit. But I'm looking forward to the Indiana segment. Yeah, RIP,
we'll see, Dan,
RIP Mike DeBoard.
But you know what, Dan? I was right a lot more than you last year, so maybe Indiana will be Penn
State. You were right about one thing.
Multiple things. I believe I was right about
Ohio State, Michigan. Michigan had it won until they blew it. They choked. But they were better for three quarters.
Ridiculous. All right, let's jump from Penn State, a team that was at the top last year. Let's jump to a team that was at the bottom, and that's our old friend Rutgers.
Oh, God.
A school where everyone knows your name.
God. Screw that. Can I just talk about how Cheers is crap? I mean, that's better than
that.
Talking about
Rutgers.
That'll
be the Rutgers preview.
I mean, here's the cliff notes on Rutgers. They're still terrible. They shouldn't really be in the conference. They're not good enough to be playing with everybody. In 10 years, they'll probably be good because they'll have Big Ten money coming in and some coach will want the job. Yeah. There. That's all anybody should ever talk about Rutgers.
Well,
now, here's why Cheers blows.
And a tough – and, like, not the easiest opening schedule if you're Rutgers. You open with, you know, Washington.
There's no such thing as an easy schedule for Rutgers. They could lose to Delaware. Like, they could lose to Delaware State. Like, there's no way to craft an easy schedule for them.
Do you think Morgan State, the Morgan State Bears, can they beat Rutgers?
I mean, if anybody could lose to Morgan State.
It's Rutgers. Here's why Cheers is not overrated, Dan. It's just not. It's a great show with beloved characters. Is it good when Coach dies? It stays good, but it's not the same. I think Bill Simmons agrees with me on that, too.
Here's why it's bad. It's based in Boston, and nothing good is – Boston has never been good about anything.
Cheers is so good, it makes you not hate them, even though they're from Boston, which is pretty hard.
Everybody on that show is loathsome. It's a bunch of drunks who are unpleasant to be around. They're not fun.
Diane's not a local.
Diane is unpleasant. Diane is severely unpleasant. Ted Danson is unpleasant.
Oh, Woody is from the Midwest.
Woody doesn't bathe. Kelsey Grammer has never been likable at any point in his life, at any moment of that life.
It's bull. Frasier is a good show. That's bullshit.
Frasier is the only thing worse than Cheers. And both shows were inexplicably on television for 40 years. But if you want good comedy, let me tell you about a little obscure show you might not have heard of called I Love Lucy. Now that was a TV show. You got an interracial marriage, you got explaining to do, you got a man and wife sleeping in separate beds like God intended, you got chocolates on a conveyor belt, what more do you need?
You know what,
you got a thing over the fireplace full of cigarettes, which I've never seen in the wild before, but apparently used to be a thing, where you just like offer your guests a cigarette from your, you know, ceremonial a packet or whatever, some big gold thing sitting on top of your mantle.
Dan, speaking of sleeping in separate beds, let's jump to a fan base who's who might be sleeping in separate beds from their spouses, I'd imagine. That's Maryland. Let's talk Maryland.
Maryland people are fun people. They have good marriages.
That might be why they don't. But why? What's the deal with Maryland this year? Why is Maryland going to kind of take this leap and be a real Big Ten team finally? Or are they going to keep kind of just staying in the back with nothing really going on?
Are we asking me?
Both.
Sorry, sure. I kind of zoned off for a second because I wasn't quite sure if Dan was talking about Cheers or my last family reunion for a minute with all the despicable people and the drunks. But to kind of summarize, Rutgers, they will continue to be in the basement of the Big Ten East. And I kind of feel the same about Maryland. I just don't see where they have really gone through and have really found any way to, you know, there's not an excitement about the program. I'm still not sold on Durkin as the head coach there. I see them competing with Rutgers for the absolute bottom basement of that division, still winning
That's
maybe
crazy.
Six
yeah.
games.
But you know, Maryland's got the
Indiana's
easiest
Indiana's in this
though.
Division.
They don't have the easiest schedule to open things off because they do open at Texas, and that could be the type
of
game
that was an insane scheduling decision. Yeah. That was bananas. Whoever did that was a fool.
So, but I kind of feel Rob. This is how I see Maryland as SEC guy. I see them as kind of like y'all's Missouri. A team that's there, but no one really knows why, and no one really cares about them. Is that fair to say? And, like, maybe...
That is a completely fair assessment, yeah.
But they're not bad, in the same way that Missouri's not bad.
Not bad, like, but who cares? They're just, like, lukewarm.
Not bad, but mediocre. And especially with this schedule this year, I mean, they are at Ohio State. They are at Wisconsin. They have Michigan and Penn State towards the end of the season. They're at Michigan State. You know, if you think Michigan State's going to get a rebound, I mean, it's a team that I go through and I look at where I look at the schedule and it's like they might be an all right team, but I don't see where the wins really come from unless, you know, you're thinking that they'll beat teams like Northwestern and Indiana and Minnesota.
Yep.
And, you know, well, you picked Minnesota apparently to go and win the big.
Hey, spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
I could think of two teams off the top of my head who are going to be demonstrably worse than three. There's three teams in that division worse than them, and who have no prayer of.
But that's
of
just three wins if
Indiana.
You're Maryland.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Like Maryland.
Well, I mean,
five.
They just need to get to. Yeah, I look at Maryland and I look at a team. I liked what Durkin did in year one. I like the way he's going with them. I just, because of that division, I think they could win six games and be better than last year and it not really show up in their record just because that's life in the Big Ten East. Like, unless somehow Michigan and Ohio State ended up in the Western Division, that's just the way life's going to be for them.
All right, well, here's my question for you then. If you like the direction that they are going, what is the trajectory that you actually see them going forward in, say, a year, 2 years, 3 years? Do you think Durkin even stays there that long?
Well, I mean, I think if they were able to have – I mean, I basically see Maryland becoming like the Big Ten version of NC State, where they're a good team. It's just they can't beat the best teams in that division. And so either the coach gets a gig and leaves, which I'm sure both Durkin and NC State's head coach would love to do, but NC State's coach can't because he hasn't been quite good enough to do that. And I don't know if Durkin will ever have that season where he wins enough to be poached. Or you just, like, you stick around long enough to where when you get fired, it's after 5 or 6 years and people look back and go, well, you know, he did pretty good.
Well,
but you know,
I think if you're Maryland,
I don't know what Maryland's. I don't know how Maryland can do much better than the direction Durkin's got him on.
No,
if that makes sense, because I don't see any scenario where Maryland ever becomes one of the, you know, one of the elites of the Big Ten. But I see them on a path to be a pretty tough out.
No, I see it probably as good as it gets. Maryland to become elite, just like Oregon did. You hope Under Armour becomes as big as Nike and you get all that money.
Yeah, and that's not. Have you checked out Under Armour stock price? Have you checked out? I know you have to dabble in the stock market.
I think it's going so high.
I blame it solely on those ugly Maryland state flag uniforms.
Those uniforms are so great. I love those uniforms.
No, you know, I love that Under Armour, though, didn't fuck with Auburn when they came over there. We don't have, it's just the same boring uniforms we always have. They didn't, like, yeah, put, like, a rebel different flag in there for some weird reason. You know?
Yeah, instead of y'all have, what was, what's that company based in Georgia that used to do all the uniforms in the Southeast?
Start with an R, right?
Yeah. Is it Rawlings? No, Rawlings is
Rawlings.
No, Rawlings make baseball gloves.
Yeah. Reliant? What was it called, Reliant?
They only have one school that, at one point they only had two. It was Georgia Tech and Colorado State. And Georgia Tech is finally going to get a real apparel deal.
There you go. Speaking of teams with great uniforms, let's jump to Indiana, a team I probably like more than you do.
God, they're awful. Like, let me make the case.
6-7 last year. What's up?
Okay, they fired their head coach. Like, okay, here's why Indiana's
going to
be terrible.
They got better.
No, here's why Indiana's going to be terrible. Rob, you're a Big Ten guy.
All right.
What's the one thing that Indiana put fear in the hearts of the other Big Ten schools? What was the one thing about them?
The one thing that honestly I would go through and look at would be their offensive scheme, the spread that they had under Kevin Wilson, who is no longer there and is
and
now
what
the,
school is he coaching at now?
Well, he happens to be the new offensive coordinator for The Ohio State University.
So the only guy that ever gave Indiana a prayer. And I'm pretty sure the only guy who's had a winning season at Indiana in like since that Antoine Randall-El's team.
Can they bring back Antoine Randall-El? Does he have any eligibility left? Because I think he played.
I'm pretty
Indiana
sure it's exhausted.
Like 8 years, right?
He did feel like he was at Indiana for 75 years.
I still think, but like, Indiana's having him
now.
So like the one guy who's managed to win anything at this school is now coaching at Ohio State. And who did they replace as offensive mastermind? Who did they pick? What great scion of great coaching tree did they bring in to keep this Indiana offense going? Why, that would be Mike DeBoard, the guy who used to be Lloyd Carr's terrible offensive coordinator, the guy who lost to Appalachian State because he kept calling passes when they were running for 9 yards a carry. Do you remember who Mike DeBoard was offensive coordinating last year? Did anybody remember?
No.
That would be Tennessee, the team that blew 100
games.
That
is true.
So this is a guy who could not win, who could not have top offenses with 2000-era Michigan recruiting when they were a top 10 recruiting program, and couldn't have decent offenses at Tennessee with 4- and 5-star players, and now he's going to be in charge of Indiana's offense? Indiana will be lucky if they score more than 10 points a game this year. Going to be one of the biggest collapses of a program in recent memory.
Now,
you, me, and 15 of our friends could go and play defense against Indiana and stop
highly
them.
Unlikely, first off. Second, we're in the weird year of sports, so you know what? Michigan State sucks. Indiana could finish fifth.
Well, here's one thing that I want to go for and a point that I want to make right now, because, Dan, you're going through and you're talking about, you know, how, you know, Indiana football had gone through and raised up to, I guess, a little bit more prominence under Wilson. And I really don't want to disparage him too much since he is now part of the flock over here. But do you know what Indiana's best season was record-wise under Kevin Wilson?
I believe it was 6-6.
6-7, both in 2015 and 2016.
They lost the bowl game. But that's like winning 12 games at a normal school. This is Indiana we're talking about.
So it's weighted. Okay, I wasn't really aware of that particular.
He was taking AP classes.
I was going through it.
He was
hearing you talk
AP
about their prominence. All right.
But no, I'll, like, I'll he made, but, being... hey, but that was a fun 6-7, because they almost beat Michigan 1 year. They almost beat Ohio State. They almost
were
beat,
a
like, they were the
out.
Almost
I will give you
8-4s
that.
Every year.
I will
and if
give
you're,
you
and
that.
If you're Indiana, if you're Indiana, your program ceiling is tough out.
Well,
like,
Dan,
hey, they're, hey, it's not a blowout.
Let's segue
although,
on over
although
here
sometimes
now.
They'd be up after three quarters and then still lose by 30, which is okay. always the fun thing about the Indiana experience.
Let's segue to a team that would like to replace Indiana in the standings, and that's Michigan State, a team that just fell the fuck off a cliff last
year. Yeah,
they're dudes. They won three games, one game in the Big Ten. I would assume that was against Maryland.
No, that was Rutgers. No, they lost to Rutgers last year. They lost to Rutgers last year. They were the one team that lost
Rutgers,
to Rutgers, weren't they?
No, Rutgers did win a conference game last year.
Okay. Didn't they almost lose to Rutgers or something?
They must have, yeah.
They beat Rutgers 49-0.
Okay. Okay.
No.
So my memory cheated. Look.
Yeah. But I want to talk to Rob here, though, Dan, first. What the fuck happened with Michigan State? This is a team, what, 3 or 4 years ago that was a couple of plays away from maybe playing for a national championship. And now they're
not even that. It was, yeah, like 3 years ago, I believe, they had gone for and they had made it in.
Yeah. They made the playoffs, I believe, right?
I want to say...
Almost did.
Yeah, Alabama smoked them in the first round.
Yeah.
Like, they were 2 years ago's version of Washington, that school that everybody knew was going to get waxed, but we had to let them in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then watch them get humiliated.
The thing is, went, yep. is that honestly, with it, I wish I could go through and give you a particular reason. I think part of it was really the one thing that really carried Michigan State a couple years back is that they had a very good, solid defense that had gone through and had lost a lot of pieces heading into the 2016 season. You know, they lost Connor Cook as quarterback, so they were a younger team, but it still seemed like they had at least enough talent to, at the very worst, maybe have a 7-8 win season. It just seemed that after they got smoked by Wisconsin in week 3, they had a tough overtime loss against Indiana the following week, and it just seemed that from that point down, it just D'Antonio just lost the team, and it just started snowballing down.
Well, Rob, I would ask you, how much do you think Michigan State's success had to do with Ohio State and Michigan kind of being down for those years?
I would say that it had less to do with Ohio State and more Michigan. Michigan State for a good long time now, and it's probably because D'Antonio is in what his 10th, 11th season as head coach there. He's been there for a while. Michigan State has been great at, hey, you were an Ohio kid who really wanted to go to Ohio State, but they didn't want you for whatever reason. Hey, you know what? Come play for Sparty. It's one of the reasons that Michigan State
has been
one, such
often
a...
one of those reasons where you can't read.
Yeah.
So come to Sparty.
And not only that, I mean, that's one of the reasons that Michigan State has been such a tough out for Ohio State is because it's so many of those kids that felt so spurned by, you know, Trussell or Meyer, whoever's coach, you know, that, you know, we're going to go through and we're going to show you why we should have been Buckeyes. But I think with Michigan's resurgence, especially, you know, because not only is Michigan now starting to go for and get some of the recruits in their state to start buying back into the program, but now those kids that would have been spurned by Ohio State, now they're going to go for and play for the rival again. I really feel that that is one of the biggest challenges that D'Antonio's going to go for and face. And honestly, I'm not necessarily sure. I think that Michigan State does bounce back because, I mean, 3-9, how much further can you go if you're not a school named Indiana, Maryland, you know, Purdue, or Rutgers? But I don't see them, you know, maybe being fourth You know, and that I feel is their ceiling this year. I see them as maybe a 7-8 win team. It's a rebuilding program to me. Interesting point that I want to just go for and just see is that based on his previous successes, at what point do you let some, you know, how many seasons do you go for and you give D'Antonio? I can see him, you know, like last year, okay, that was a fluke. This year, if they're that bad again, I see that seat starting to warm up a little, but I still think we're probably a good 2-3 years from anybody really seriously talking about, you know, a head coaching change up there.
Historically, isn't Michigan State kind of a team that's not going to make rash decisions, though, about their – like, they might be like the anti-Auburn in that way, if that's fair to say. Like, they're not a team that's going to fire a coach for a bad
season. Here's what I think. Because I think they're going to go 2-10. Because here's the big thing that people sometimes forget about last year's team. That team was loaded with upperclassmen. That team collapsed despite being full of seniors. This year's team is going to have, like, all freshmen and sophomores. So the guys who were not good enough to play last year over a bunch of really terrible upperclassmen are now going to be start. Like, basically, this was the year where it was supposed to fall apart, and it fell apart a year early. I think this is going to be very rough for them. But I agree with you, Zach, that Michigan State doesn't seem like a rash program, but I think they could get driven into derangement because they were just in the national championship, right?
Yeah.
They're just in the playoffs. And then to go 4-8, 3-9, or 3-9, 2-10, I think that could cause panic oh my God, it's slipping away, it's falling away.
You know, I kind of look at Michigan State, and I know I'm always, like, pretty Auburn and stuff, but they kind of remind me of Auburn when Alabama kind of sucked for a little bit. And Auburn had a decent run. Then Alabama came back, and it was back to kind of the same old, same old. I think Michigan State, you need to reinvent that program and look at maybe playing a different type of football to be successful now in the Big Ten, because that old shit ain't going to work because you ain't going to get those players. So maybe
they've got to
find a gimmicky offense or something different.
They've got to change their offense up. But this is a thing other coaches have talked about. Even when Michigan State was beating Michigan's ass every year and going like 9-10 wins, Michigan still beat them for kids in state.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a program that even when they were winning, they were never able to convert that into recruiting. So they just kept being like, we're going to take these plucky guys that everybody missed. And even when they started having the win years where they should have been able to start going, all right, now we're going to be able to compete with some recruits, maybe not necessarily with Ohio State, but hey, we're going to start competing with Michigan for kids in state, or we're going to start competing with Penn State. They still were never able to compete with those kids. Michigan State was still recruiting at like a Minnesota level.
And you know what worries me if a Michigan State too this year? Did they play Notre Dame last year? Because that's back on the schedule.
Yeah, they played. I think they actually won that game against Notre Dame. And then after that is when the wheels fell off the bus.
Okay. Yeah. Is it like a pretty decently opening schedule? But then I think about week 5-6, you start hitting like the better Big Ten teams. Michigan State. I mean, it's the team that could start off 3-1 and then have another class.
That might be what makes you fire your coach.
You
start
off with
like,
Bowling
I just
Green
think this team
and,
is terrible.
Like Weber State,
and
good chance
to
be 2-0.
And I think the other issue is that a lot of what Michigan State was based on is that D'Antonio came up with a novel defensive idea, playing that quarters coverage every single play, and teams in the Big Ten and abroad had a hard time beating that coverage. But as other teams copied Michigan State, and Ohio State, y'all copied them for a while. Y'all were playing quarters coverage every play. All these teams copied Michigan State. Everybody saw that defense so much. Offenses figured out how to beat it, and then Michigan State is left. This was your one big trick that you had on everybody. Everybody's figured out the trick, and now you're just a mediocre team with no skill players. And with nothing, really. And your defense now just gets shredded.
Dan, you know what worries me about Michigan State? Like, just kind of flipping through their schedule. They get all the hard teams at home, but they'll probably lose those games. But even, like, the teams, like, say, in Iowa or Northwestern, or even, like, a weird team like Indiana, it's all, like, away. And that's always like a little bit scarier than having those guys in your house, because you're probably going to lose to the Penn States, the Ohio States, the Michigans of the world. But you can't really go into Minnesota and lose and have a good year for Michigan State, and that's going to be a tough game for them on the road, I think.
Well, and here's the other thing that Rob, I'm thinking you can back me up on this. When Michigan State's not any good, they have one of the worst football fan bases in the Big Ten. Like, their fans will just not show up.
Oh, yeah, no.
Show up and leave after, like, a half of a quarter. Like, they are, like, this is not a through rain and shine. Like, this is not even Penn State, where even when they were terrible, they were selling out every game. If Michigan State goes back to being in the middle or worse, that place turns into a mausoleum.
Am I wrong? You say that, Dan, but you're a Bar Rescue fan, and don't you remember the Michigan State fan who had the bar in Ann Arbor in Michigan State color? it wouldn't change it, and his business sucked. That's a diehard fan. They got one. He doesn't live.
He doesn't live in Lansing. He doesn't live in East Lansing. He lives in Ann Arbor. So he can't go to the home game.
You can't even open his bar on Michigan State game day. Bar in East Lansing. Oh. Well, Rob, you go ahead. Sorry, didn't mean to.
No, it's quite all right. I completely agree with that assessment. And it was very clear early on, if you go through and you watch some of those games, you know, as the season progressed, those stands got emptier and emptier. And even for the Ohio State-Michigan State game, which was the second last game of the season, you would have thought that, okay, well, you know, leading into the season, that's a pretty intriguing matchup. And it was a game that was even, you know, particularly close. But, I mean, you know, the majority of the fans and stuff, if you were going through and watching that abysmal excuse for a game, half the stadium was red, you know, where there wasn't empty seats or, you know, people in ponchos and stuff just trying to cover up from the terrible weather. I think I even went through and started looking into tickets at one point, because I think a buddy of mine said that they were going for as little as, like, you know, $10-$15 in, like, the lower bowl. You know, and granted, you know, at that point they had pretty much, you know, the season was pretty much over and stuff, and Lansing's a little bit of a drive, but, you know, enough fans, you know, went through and took advantage of that and stuff, just from the Michigan State fans thinking that we're not going to have any chance at all in this game, even for the potential upset. You know, it's a very fair weather, you know, fan base and stuff. When they're, you know, when they're great, that's a very tough environment to play in. If they're not doing so well, if they're having a mediocre season, or if they're having a terrible season and stuff, that place is a graveyard.
All right, Rob, I want to stay in the state, and let's jump to, let's play this little song. Have you heard this one before? All right, enough of that shit.
Yeah, thank you.
You didn't even get to the song.
Yeah, because the song sucks.
It's
that?
A good song. No, I'm not even a Michigan lover, but it's a good song.
It can suck my dick. But let's talk Michigan, because I think a lot of people are looking at Michigan.
Hey, that's the Steiner Brothers. That's the Steiner Brothers original thing. Like, come on.
Okay, yeah. I want to talk Michigan, because this is an interesting team to me as an outsider, because it looks like a team a lot of people are thinking, like, might take a step back this year in the Big Ten. Is that fair to say?
I think it's fair to say, and I think it is a fair assessment. This, I think, is going to be where we really see what Jim Harbaugh does with the Michigan program. At this point, it's going to be a lot of his recruits that are starting to come in. You know, they have been very highly touted, but Michigan has also had some, you know, higher touted, you know, programs before that, you know, the recruits come in and be it the coach Rich Rod or you know, even I think Brady Hoke had at least one good recruiting class that didn't really pan out. But
yeah, Brady Hoke's recruiting classes were great. Yeah. It just took Jim Harbaugh to do anything with them.
Exactly. But Michigan lost a lot of play. I think they lost something like a good, you know, double-digit starters. And a lot
their
on
defense. Especially
their
lost
defense.
A lot of guys.
So yeah. The question really is, Is it rebuild or reload? You know, that whole, you know, absolute cliche and stuff with them. I still think Michigan is a double-digit win team. And I really see them going through and, you know, contending in the East. It's just whether or not, you know, whether or not they really have the horses that go through, step up, and actually fulfill that role. I think Harbaugh is good enough to coach to go through and to, you know, keep them, you know, 9-10 wins is probably as low as I would go for them. But I can see them potentially being a one-loss team this year. It's, I think they are, as you said, a very intriguing team. The one thing that I will go through and say, though, is that if for whatever reason they don't live up to standards, or if they do take a step back, and especially if they can't get the job done against Ohio State, I'm not saying that it's going to start going through to the point where they're on fire, but I start wondering if Jim Harbaugh's khaki pants start feeling a little warmer in particular areas.
No. Well, that's not, no,
Can I pose this question real quick?
Jim Harbaugh is never going to be in hot seat talk.
Well, can I
it'll be like
scenario?
That angsty thing. You remember the Lloyd Carr era where there's always this angst, but they were never really serious about firing him. I think if they lose again to Ohio State, that angst, that ennui, as the MGO blog people always call it, might start to rear its head.
See, I don't think it'll officially get to hot seat, but I think you'll start hearing, like you said, some of the angsty. I honestly think that you know, especially if it maybe goes to a fourth year in a row of not being able to, you're going to start hearing a lot more of, okay, well, you brought the program back up to prominence, but, you know, where are the Big Ten championships? Where are the wins against Ohio State? You start wondering at what point, you know, because it's not even so much, I think, just, you know, his particular history. Ohio State has owned this rivalry in the last
decade.
You know, and
longer than that.
Yeah.
It's getting close to like two decades now.
Exactly. I mean, so you start going through and you start wondering at what point, you know, does it start getting to that point of, okay, you know, it's, you know, we've been patient. You've brought it back up to prominence. But, you know, in Michigan, we have a higher standard, you know. And
see, I don't think he'll get any of that just because of Rich Rodriguez and Brady Hoke. Like, Michigan people are so ecstatic to not be humiliated on a weekly basis that, like even being kicked in the teeth by Ohio State every year, now that's at least something close. Like, oh, remember the good old days when we just used to lose to Ohio State but used to beat everybody else? Like, that. I think the horror of the Rich Rodriguez, those 6 years, are going to keep that sort of thing from happening. But,
well, Can I pose a question?
I mean, last year I picked Michigan to beat Ohio State, and they almost did, but they
can
didn't.
Can I pose a question here?
No way they beat Ohio State this year, in my opinion.
Yeah, but can I pose a question real quick with Harbaugh? It feels like with Harbaugh here, like he bought a new car. We're at the point where this new car smell's kind of gone, and we're about to see if this was really a good purchase or not for Michigan. I think this is the year where, like, you don't have to win the Big Ten, but I think you got to beat Ohio State to kind of prove this is like.
You can't. I don't think you can do that because they're going to be so young. I don't think that's fair. They're having to replace.
Man, this is big time college football. It's Ohio State, Michigan, baby. There ain't no fair.
But they're in the same division as Ohio State. Like, it'd be one thing if Ohio State was like Jim Tressel era, you know, 10-11 wins, but you're clearly a step below the national elite. This is like Ohio State at like max capacity. Like competing for national championships every year,
time,
Ohio State.
I think the new car smell's going with Harbaugh, and if he doesn't have a double digit win year, maybe a loss to Ohio State, then yeah, I think there will be some fire. If that's an 8-win year, if they go to Florida week one,
they're not going to come anywhere close to that kind of talk.
Well, what if they lose to Florida week one?
But Florida's is an SEC program. It's not like losing to Akron.
It still matters. All the shit that Harbaugh talks about the SEC, if he doesn't go into Florida and beat Florida, a Florida team that sucks, then yeah, I think the heat's on him hard. I think
no,
you're,
not
again,
Michigan.
You're
not
defending
with Michigan
your good buddy
people.
Jim Harbaugh. instead of looking at
But
this,
like Michigan, but I'm just telling you that Michigan people are still like a dog that got beaten.
I don't think so. I think you just have puppy dog eyes for this man, and I think the reality is he's talked a big game, and he's got to step it up eventually. That's what's got to happen, because he hasn't so far. Thus far, he's gotten his ass kicked in every major situation.
They've won double-digit games in their first 2 years.
How many times have he been in the playoffs?
How many times has Michigan made a bowl game before he got there?
It doesn't matter. It's Michigan.
It does.
Notre Dame went to a national championship in a couple of years. They weren't Michigan anymore.
Like, it had been so long since even the most deranged, idiot Michigan fan would go, well, we're
Brian
Michigan.
Kelly
we're
just better than everybody. At a much harder school to win at. How long did it take for him to go to a national championship?
This would be like saying we're Alabama people ready to fire Nick Saban after they lost to Utah in the Sugar Bowl. Like, no.
Somewhere. But you know what Saban also didn't do, Danny? He didn't come in and talk a bunch of shit and make himself to be a big
Nick
deal.
Nick Saban's the most arrogant guy in college
football. He never went
he
to the
banned
Big
the
10,
press
like,
from
the
coming
Harbaugh
to anything
has.
Before
Harbaugh's
he won
a
lie
to put pressure on him. I think you're discounting that because you got puppy dog guys for your
No, but what you're missing is that a lot of
Mr.
the stuff
Milk
that you
and
think,
Boogers.
The thing that you, the things you think are super cocky are like things that Michigan fans love. Like, nobody at Michigan is going, oh man, you talked a bunch of shit about the SEC. You're putting pressure on us. No!
No,
if you're just sitting there with
an
SEC fan with that SEC fan hatred, you're sitting there with that SEC fan hatred of anybody who deigns to say the SEC's overrated and thinking that Big Ten fans are going to get mad that their coach said the SEC's kind of shitty.
No, but I think if he goes and loses to Florida,
and they're not
going to
lose to Florida. Florida's crap.
You don't know that.
They're not even going to lose to them.
How young is this team this
year? Like, Michigan could be a clear step down, and they're still going to be Florida. Because Florida sucks.
Yeah, you never know. It's college. He's a 20-year-old.
Well, but, I mean, we could say that about every game. But, like,
yes,
you know.
That's what makes college football fun. That's the best.
But the biggest key for Michigan is how do they replace Jabril Peppers on defense? Because that guy was like a one-man, like, spread offense killer. Because he would just pop. He could get the guys in the slot. He could attack the run. He could come after the quarterback. He was like the Swiss Army knife of their defense. And, you know, when he was hurt or at points last year, their defense was clearly not as good. So can they replace that? Can they have that very pressure-based defense, which they had last year, where they were blitzing almost every play, you know, without that guy to make it work?
How about this scenario, though? Like, maybe you have a tough one against Florida, Cincinnati stuff. What if Air Force pops you in the mouth week three?
They're not.
Air Force. Come on.
Like, they're not.
The option. You never know. Oh, I'm sorry that you don't respect the troops, boys.
I don't. Also, their defensive coordinator has coached at all kinds of tiny schools. He's seen the option. Like, he's not like that. I mean, he coached against Georgia Tech all the time at Boston College. Like, it's not,
no, but,
it's not a big
But thing. Realistically, though, there are two games I would circle to say this is the – Michigan has to win these games to have what I consider a good Michigan year. For a team that's ranked in the preseason top 10, I think you got to beat Penn State, you got to go to Penn State and win, and you got to go to Wisconsin and win. You got to win those two.
Yeah, and I think they'll
beat
both of those teams.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not easy going to Penn State. Ohio State learned
that. It's not easy to win at either of those places, honestly. Yeah. And with Wisconsin and Ohio State back-to-back, that actually could be a pretty – You know, that could go through, and that's a pretty brutal way to end your season.
they beat Penn State by, like, 700 points last year. Like,
Michigan.
But a home field is 3 points. It's not 30. It's not 300.
No, it's emotion, man. It's feeling.
Emotion doesn't matter when the other team's in your backfield. You can be emotionally fired up, but when the defensive lineman is already five yards deep,
You also have to realize, too, that
Michigan, you know, Penn State game, that was a lot earlier in the season where, you know, again, Penn State really wasn't the team that it seemed like they ended up being at the end of the season until
they
had that
to
Ohio
gear.
State game.
Yeah.
You know, they turned it over the second, you know, half of the year and stuff. So it's kind of – I see your point with it, but it's almost kind of to a certain extent, it's the same question that we have about Michigan that we have about Penn State is, you know, who are they really? And I think, you know, that game will go through. It's more towards the middle of the season. I think it will go through, and you'll see, you know, the two teams a little bit more what they're going to be for the entire season at that point. So I think it's a good measuring stick, and I think this is the seventh week of the season. October 21st.
October 21st.
Yeah.
But here's the thing about Michigan. Their defensive line is still jacked up awesome. And that was the thing Penn State couldn't stop. So unless Penn State makes a huge jump up in their offensive line and can stop that Michigan defensive line,
well,
it's just going to be the same thing.
D-line was good because of the threat of Peppers, though, and blitzing.
Well, no, their defensive line.
It's not all D-line.
Their defensive line was the best defensive line in college football last year.
They were also helped with a good secondary, Dan. That's defense.
They made their secondary look a little bit better than it was. Jabril Pepper. The rest of that secondary wasn't as good as Jabril Pepper.
But Peppers does help that D line. I don't think that's ridiculous to say that if you lose Peppers, that D line might take a step back.
I mean, the defensive line is just not as deep. So like last year, they were so deep that they were able to have like two or three injuries and still be awesome. If they have those kind of injuries again this year, they don't have the depth that's behind it that they had last year.
You know what?
That's
going to
be the big issue with Michigan.
I'm saying three losses for Michigan. I think they get popped in Florida. I think they lose to Wisconsin, lose to Ohio State.
They're not going to lose to Wisconsin. Wisconsin's not going to beat anybody good in the Big Ten East. That's Wisconsin's motto. They go 10-2, and they lose to every good team in the East. But then they beat every Western
SEC
team.
You're right, and they'll lose to Florida. All right, let's jump down, Rob.
Yep.
Your team.
It's not LSU. We're talking about good teams.
Let's jump down to Ohio State, a team I'm picking to win the Big Ten. I'm picking to go to playoffs.
Ballsy.
Yeah.
What a ballsy pick of yours.
Well, it's all
oh, my gosh. Everybody look
playoffs.
At the big balls on Tunney. He's picking Ohio State.
It's a part of my all-SU playoff prediction, which every team in the playoffs will end in SU. Rob, tell us about Ohio State. After kind of a disappointing year last year, is this team going to bounce back? Have you fixed the problems with the passing game or not?
Disappointing.
Well, I'm going to say.
I love a team disappointing that wins like 11 games.
Yeah, you know, but the funny thing is that's an accurate statement, though. I mean, I don't know if it just goes to show that, you know, again, we you know, and I will admit it, we have been spoiled with our history, especially in the last 15 years.
Well, Rob, it is, as an Auburn fan, Ohio State's similar programs, two of the best ever. Dan doesn't know. He's never followed an elite program.
Auburn!
Like.
Auburn! Auburn!
But, no, I honestly feel that some of the changes that they have made to the offense, and one of them we have talked about earlier with the addition of Kevin Wilson, I do feel is going to go for and improve some things on the passing end of things. I think early on, OSU got they really benefited from beating up early on some lesser opponents, and I will even include Oklahoma in that. Noah Brown had just a fantastic game in that Oklahoma game, and then really kind of just trailed off for the rest of the season. I do think that it was a combination of, at first, it just wasn't the wide receivers, you know, going through and either running the right routes or making the right plays and stuff. There were a lot of drops, especially in the middle part of the season. And I think that started getting into JT Barrett, who, you know, at this point, you know, is going on, you know, again, as captain of the team. And you know, it was back to being his team again, being the leader. I think he tried the shoulder, you know, way too much, and you know, even with his legs, with his passing, tried to go through and tried to be the hero every play instead of going through and you know, making the smarter plays at times. The O-line, I think, at times just did not, you know, gel together. But they just they pushed themselves really into that, you know, final four last year, just basically mostly on talent, not necessarily on performance, because a lot of the games that they even won were just butt ugly and just, you know, were frustrating to go through and to watch, because you would see the talent go through and make the plays that you have been wondering where the hell it's been all game. I do think that they will go through, they'll make the adjustments. I think the humbling and the epic humbling they got from Clemson last year will definitely go through and motivate them. I go through and I look at it. I still think that this team does lose a game somewhere. It's a tough schedule with...
Well, that's what I want to jump in here, Rob, because like, I look at the first big game. That's not at Indiana. That's Oklahoma comes into town. Oklahoma's going to remember what happened last year. They've kept a lot of major players from that team. They're going to be better this year. And that's what, if you lose it for Ohio State, you kind of start sweating, because you do have Penn State at home, but we don't, you know, Penn State could still win that game. And then you have to go at Michigan. So this Oklahoma game could really be your whole season and how your team's going to react. That's one I'm really circling.
It really is a game to go through and circle. The one thing that I will go through and state is that will be the, you know, second game, I believe, for their first-year head coach who's, like, 30-something. So I don't want to say Oklahoma is not going to be a tough game. I do think it's going to be close. But I can't see Urban Meyer losing in the Horseshoe at night to a young coach his second game in. I think Oklahoma will be motivated. I think they'll stick around. You know, I think it will still be a game, you know, throughout three quarters, but I think, you know, the adjustments will be made for with the experienced head coach. Though Oklahoma is bringing back a lot of guys and stuff, Ohio State is bringing back a lot more of their talent, too. They are needing to replace some guys on defense, but the D-line is going to be really solid. I think it's going to rival Michigan as far as being one of the better D-lines in, you know, not only the conference, but the nation. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Well, not only under the lights, but I think that's the week two of the season. That's one of the biggest weekends. College football. That's the weekend where you got UGA Notre Dame. You have Auburn Clemson. Obviously, Ohio State. The Ohio State game. You also have my favorite game, Utah BYU. So lots of major teams going at it.
Laugh. That Holy War.
Oh, no. The Holy War is fun to watch, man.
It's going to be a hell of a lot better than that Georgia Notre Dame trash. And I'll be watching
bits and pieces of that game from beautiful Panama City Beach that weekend. But that's the game I'm really interested in for Ohio State. I think we'll learn. Is this Ohio State team not just going to maybe make the playoffs to win the Big Ten, but can they go win a national championship in another year where Alabama's down, you know, and a year where Clemson's down?
I think this is where I get to my big prediction, which is Ohio State's going to win the national championship, boys. Like, this is – I don't
want to make predictions too soon, but I've definitely got Ohio – that's what I say. This Oklahoma game's the one I'm going to really determine if I like them to win the national championship. Because I probably get LSU, Ohio State, and I think Ohio State beats LSU 7 times out of 10.
I think my favorite hire of the season was Kevin Wilson to Ohio State. I think that was – I think
after
he's Boy not –
Cam go to LSU?
I think Wilson was a better hire. I think I love Canada, and God knows I love Matt Canada. But he's not Kevin Wilson. Like, Kevin Wilson, before he took the Indiana job, was making a case that he was the greatest offensive coordinator in modern college football history. Like, the offenses he built at Oklahoma were just death machine, unstoppable death machine. And then he went to Indiana and with, crappy talent, turned Indiana into, like, a top 15 offense. Now he's going to be back coaching blue-chip programs. Honestly, coaching better players than he even had at Oklahoma. Because, I mean, Oklahoma is like an A-minus recruiter, especially that at that point in Oklahoma's history. They were a little bit better than they are now. Ohio State, this is A++++. Like, this is the best of the best. You know, it's real. I mean, you've got Ohio State and Alabama are just so far above everybody else in recruiting. He's going to have access to a caliber of player he hasn't had in a long time. And he completes, like, Urban Meyer has never been the play caller. So when you talk about the Urban Meyer offense, you don't want to go too far there because he's always been relying on coordinators. But Urban Meyer's – when you cut Urban Meyer, he bleeds running game. Like, he is a guy first – like, if you just told Urban Meyer to call a game, he would just call run. He would call 70 runs and, like, 3 passes. He's now got a coordinator – who is extremely skilled in coaching the passing game and coaching quarterbacks and coaching wide receivers and getting the absolute most out of his passing game.
Dan,
which
Meyer
is a thing
type of guy
who's
gonna
have never had.
Was he the type of guy who
this
will
is
go
a whole new
gut,
you know?
Do you think?
Well, Urban Meyer has always tended to defer to his coordinators until they screw up so bad that the running back is calling them out. So, I mean, Urban Meyer isn't a guy who micromanages his coordinator, so I see him, and you know, he hired Kevin Wilson. Like, he's gonna let Kevin
Rob,
Wilson
cook.
But, Rob,
I want to go to you now for, like, the big fan. As an Ohio State fan and a lot of my guy who bleeds Scarlet and Buckeyes or whatever the fuck it is, are you looking at this year, and do you think we have – this is a national championship team right here for Ohio State? Not that you'll win it, but do you think this is a team where you wouldn't be that shocked?
I think it has the potential, yes. I will go through. I do think it's a one-loss team, but I think it definitely will be competing. They are my pick to come out of the East. I do think that they'll go through. They will win the Big Ten, and they will be one of the four in. I honestly felt that last year, especially with the talent that they had lost in the previous year, that I felt that this team would have been, you know, last year would have been good, but I was honestly expecting about a two-loss team. I thought it was a team that was going to need to kind of learn to go through the gel, and, you know, they still, with one loss, ended up going through. Now, whether or not they, you know, in retrospect, deserve to be there over a Penn State, you know, the point is kind of moot. You know, it's a debatable, you know, especially seeing how the 31-0 drubbing came along. But I do go through and I look at this, and even, you know, as last year I looked at, this was going to be the year where they were going to be the serious contenders. You know, and I think a lot of it is the key is, you know, how they do in that Oklahoma game. Can they beat Michigan in Michigan, where, you know, that game is super amped up to begin with? Michigan is probably still going to be a very solid, if not a very good team this year.
But that's
and
the
especially
game,
after,
it could be Michigan's whole season
and,
kind of comes
and
down to that game.
And yeah. Not only that, it's a revenge factor. As much as last year, the game gave me an absolute heart attack at times. You know, that was an all-time classic in retrospect. Now, I did have to go through and basically pace around my parents' neighborhood in Wisconsin for an hour afterwards to go through to get the blood pressure back down. But, you know, it was an epic game that Michigan came out on the short side of, who I know that they feel extremely wronged, especially by the 4th-and-1 call. But it's really going to be interesting to see how those games go through. Oklahoma, Penn State, and Michigan are really the three key games, but I don't think either of those three are going to be the one that Ohio State loses. I think Iowa upsets them in Iowa City this year. But I still think that they'll be, you know, solid enough to where they'll be able to go for and crawl back in and, you know, probably get in as a, you know, number two or number three overall. And then once you go for and get into that, you know, college football playoff, anything's possible.
All right. Now, I want to jump to the other side of the Big Ten now. But,
do we have to?
We're an hour in, so this is what we're going to do it this way. Illinois, Purdue, why do these teams suck, Rob? And not for football reasons. Why do these schools suck? Why would you do these schools?
Okay. Purdue is in the absolute middle of nowhere between Indianapolis and Chicago. It is part of the most boring section of the drive that I do when I go for and visit my folks in Milwaukee. And really, Indiana itself is just a boring, boring state in general. And somehow,
is it not as colorful as Parks and Rec, led me to believe? It's not full of...
Hey,
no,
I got to speak up for our Big 12 correspondent, Darren Weber, who's from Indianapolis. Indianapolis is a pretty decent town.
Indianapolis is like the one bright spot in just, You know, it's the one colorful spot in a wall full of beige. It's the one picture that you have hanging on the wall when you first move in to a place. It's
the baking soda in the cabinet.
Exactly.
Nothing else is in there.
Use whatever analogy that you want, but no, I mean, just Purdue is just located in a bland state, and Illinois to me is always a program that I feel like they should do better than they do. I just don't know if it's just they don't have the aspirations. I just don't know if kids from Chicago, you know, are just not excited to go to, you know, where is it? Champaign,
right. Urbana.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, you know, you're going to the middle of nowhere in a state that really, if it didn't have Chicago, would probably be about as boring as Indiana.
I don't think people realize that without Chicago, Illinois is basically like Kentucky.
Or
like,
Missouri.
It's like Kentucky surrounded with Chicago in it.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, Chicago
like,
is a hell
like,
of a city. I love it to death.
What do you call those fellas? What do you call that rap group with the clown makeup?
ICP.
The Insane Clown Posse. Yeah.
Yeah, like Insane Clown Posse is like the official like musician of most of Indiana, of most of Illinois. Fan. Sure, that's that right. Clear. I forgot.
Because Juggalos are anti-racist, and they're anti-Nazis, and I think they're pro-socialized medicine. So I'm down with the Juggalos.
You're down with the clown?
Down with the clown. They're my brothers. All right, screw those boring teams. Let's jump to the hot ones here in this division.
And we can't move that quickly because here's the issue with Illinois, in my opinion at least, is that like they base everything around winning Chicago, but nobody wins Chicago because Notre Dame wins Chicago. Like if you're a great
player, Chicago's not even a great football hotbed. It's more of a basketball town than anything.
Yeah, Chicago's more of like a basketball producer, and all the blue chip talent in Chicago goes to Notre Dame.
Yeah,
if
you can go to Illinois,
if you're a
five
star kid out of Chicago, you go to Notre Dame
because you're getting the education.
Well, and it's close. I mean, shit.
What's the
Notre
better?
Dame might
you
be
go to
closer.
Notre Dame, you're gonna have a better job than if you went to Illinois. More than likely,
like, Notre Dame may be physically closer to Chicago than Illinois. Like I think it's like 2.5 hours Notre Dame, and it's like 3 hours to Illinois. Like it's
something
not like,
like
Illinois
that.
Is in Chicago.
All right, let's jump
but,
over
but,
now though.
Purdue, we got to talk about Purdue because they got a good coach.
No, we talked about Purdue.
Coach.
It's over.
They got
right,
a good
Purdue
coach.
Purdue or Minnesota? Jeff,
we're getting both because Purdue made one of the best hires of last year. We have to talk about that because right. Purdue got Jeff Brohm from Western Kentucky.
That's right.
Which is like I would have never thought Purdue could pull that off. That seemed way above what Purdue was capable of. Purdue, like, on a base level, feels like the most hopeless program in the Power Five. It's like Purdue and Iowa State.
Weren't we both almost advocating for just Purdue to throw a bunch of money at Paul Johnson and just run
the
option?
It was like, you got to do something different because you're Purdue. Like, you're a misery.
Or at least that makes your football team fun to watch. Like, that's how Tech got some, you know, some buzz back, pun intended. From running the options. It's a fun thing to watch. Students want to come and watch games like that. It's a cool offense. And when your team doesn't have good talent, it helps to have a cool offense.
I mean, hey, it worked for Arkansas.
Yeah.
Like this same offense, the Bobby Petrino spread and throw it deep offense, like, it made Arkansas into a fun program.
It built Louisville into a program.
It built Louisville from nothing.
Yeah.
You know, so when you look at what Purdue did this offseason getting Jeff Brohm, that was a tremendous hire, and I would not be shocked to see Purdue in 2 or 3 years be right there in the mix for the Big Ten.
Right
West
back because, when they had Kyle Orton there.
Well, we talked about hires. Let's jump to Minnesota, who made, I think, the biggest coaching hire, maybe besides the one at Texas this year.
Oh, yeah, they got my boy, Row the Boat, Jeff, PJ Fleck.
Row the Boat, baby.
Yeah, PJ Fleck shirtless, rowing the boat around
so
Minnesota.
So, do we think Minnesota
frozen
in a dilly bar in the snow? Yeah.
Does Minnesota take a step forward this year? Because Fleck he's no more as a motivator. He's a guy who can take guys who are a 2-star guy and turn them into a 3-star guy.
No, actually, I don't. I don't know if that's true.
Well, he's okay. He did recruit well, but that's kind of the rep. He's more of a motivator. You think of him as a Paul Heyman, if you will.
He's a motivator and a recruiter, though, because if you look at Western Michigan, their first 2 years, they were kind of awful. Mm-hmm. But he ended up recruiting. Like, when you look at the MAC recruiting, like, the average MAC school recruits in, like, 80th, 85th, 90th in the rankings. Western Michigan was pulling down, like, the 45th recruiting class in the country, which that doesn't sound tremendous, but when everybody else in your conference is, like, 90th and 95th, that is holy shit levels of talent disparity.
Well,
that
I think is like some Ohio State and Purdue. To Purdue, to be fair.
He can talk. The boy can talk.
He can talk.
And so
does Minnesota, you know, step, though? Because, like, I'm seeing him in the rankings. I'm seeing him in, like, the tier with Iowa, Nebraska, and Northwestern. Can they finish above those teams, Rob, from what you said?
I think everybody – I mean, Rob, you can back me up on this. But it's like – but, like, I think nobody knows what the hell Minnesota is going to do, because they'll either win 10 games or they'll win two and have to start all over.
And I think I'm going to lean a little bit more above six, especially looking at the early part of their season where they have teams like, you know, the mighty Buffalo and Middle Tennessee and Maryland and Purdue. I think it's very, you know, especially if Michigan State's not going to go for a rebound, they could be a 5-6 win team by week 7.
Yeah.
You know,
but you get Michigan State at home too.
And it's one of these things to where PJ Fleck at Minnesota is going to be a interesting experiment, because again, it's, we could see what he could do with talent disparity in a lower conference. Now he's going to be on the other side of that coin, where the talent that he has is not going to match up, as, you know, right now with, you know, and again, they don't have him on the schedule, but like an Ohio State or a Penn State, or, you know, teams like Michigan or Wisconsin, who they do have on the schedule. So it'll be interesting to see how his whole row the boat mantra and his motivational skills go through and translate, you know, to a higher conference.
Think this will be a dancing homer situation, Rob, where maybe it works a little bit better in the minor leagues here, but now we're in the majors in the Big Ten? Does this matter? This year, row the boat bullshit?
I can see it maybe working for a year or two, but, you know, with this year, I think this year will be a very interesting year to see how it does. You know, I would say by year two or three, we'll have a very good look and to see if Minnesota can take a step up to where they are competing, you know, into a Big Ten West, where honestly, you know, 9-10 wins could go through, could win you the division right now. Last year, they, you know, went 9-4, you know, with Tracy Clay, you know, it even won a bowl game, you know, so it's interesting to see if they can go through. I see them being at least a 7-8 win team, possibly winning a bowl game this year. The one thing that I will go through and mention with our boy PJ Fleck here's an interesting piece of trivia that I actually just discovered probably about a month ago. And I'll throw this question out. Where did PJ Fleck start his coaching career? Where was his first job?
I actually know this answer.
All right.
Zach, I'll let you go.
I believe he started it at, the Wesleyan College with Macon, Georgia. No, I don't know.
It's Rutgers, right?
Oh,
no. He was a
it's not!
He was a graduate assistant at The Ohio State University in 2006. And as a graduate assistant, you want to guess what one of his daily jobs was? It was
Drew Tressel's sweater vest.
Please tell me it involved like rowing something. Like he had to row across the lake to Jim Tressel's house to get his mail or something.
You guys are kind of getting close. It did involve Jim Tressel. I'm not exactly sure if he had the row across the practice facility over the old Tangi to go through and to get to High Street, where the Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers establishment was, where he had to fetch lunch from Mr. Trussell every day.
Raising Cane's every day.
Raising Cane's. Apparently Trussell likes some of that Raising Cane's sauce. But,
you know what? Trussell likes that, and he likes to talk about when punts went bad.
Exactly. You know, so he probably had to put up with a lot of that, too. And, you know, I wish that Ohio State was actually playing Minnesota this year so I could go through and make a, you know, you're still going to be, you know, going through and fetching, you know, chicken fingers for the university kind of joke there. But sadly, I guess I'll have to wait till next year to go through and throw that one out. But, yeah, there's your useless piece of P.J. Fleck trivia.
I kind of laid out the con about P.J. Fleck earlier, like the whole thing of, he doesn't tend to win out of the gate. But the pro side of it is he's only had two head coaching jobs. The first head coaching job, Western Michigan was a complete teardown. You mentioned it earlier, Rob. This team was actually pretty good last year, Minnesota. Like, they did not get a new head coach because Tracy Clase was a terrible coach. They got a new coach because Tracy Clase is like an idiot and completely mismanaged a team situation, which there's no need getting into all that because it's kind of a rough subject matter. But, like, their coach got fired for off-the-field stuff, not because his team was bad. This is a pretty decent team, especially for the Big Ten West. I think this is a great school for P.J. Fleck to go to because he's already proven he can recruit players to cold weather by being in Western Michigan. There ain't a huge difference between the temperature, getting kids to come play at Western Michigan versus getting kids to come play in Minnesota. Everybody always talks about the cold at Minnesota. It ain't warm in Western Michigan. And he's in the crap division. He don't have to play Ohio State every year. He don't have to play Michigan. He don't have to play Penn State. All he got to do is beat Wisconsin. Well, he can out-recruit Wisconsin. He can out-recruit Nebraska. Nebraska doesn't even know what the hell they are. Of course he can out-recruit Nebraska. If he can bring in – he does not have to out-recruit Ohio State. If he can just bring in a higher caliber of talent than Wisconsin, Iowa, and Nebraska, Minnesota could become a perennial Big Ten West favorite. And you know what? You do that, and he could move on to the next big – row that boat to some other port of call. But he is – I think this was a very smart job to take. I think he's going to do well there, and I wouldn't be shocked if they won the division.
All right, I want to jump to these. I want to lump these three teams in together because we're pressing for time. Northwestern, Iowa, Nebraska. We think Nebraska's going to suck, right? I think that's fair to say. But how about Iowa and Northwestern?
Iowa's going to be Iowa, right? Like,
yeah, I think at this point with a Kurtz Ferentz, Iowa team, you kind of know what you're getting at this point. It's going to be, a solid, 8-9 win team. Occasionally they're going to go through, maybe have a double-digit win season and challenge a bit. I do see them, I said it earlier, the game that they have with Ohio State in Iowa City, I see them going through, and that's going to be their big signature upset win of the year. But even that, I see them maybe being an 8-win team, outside of maybe knocking off, a opponent or two that they shouldn't have. Teams, that they're going to face, I think, Penn State's going to beat them, Wisconsin's going to beat them. Even Minnesota could go for and give them a run for their money. So I don't see them going for and contending for the division this year.
Here's the spoiler alert on Iowa. They're gonna run the zone. They're gonna run zone, outside zone and inside zone. Their quarterback is not gonna run the ball. They're gonna throw a lot of short passes. Their defense is gonna play cover two. They're gonna beat a team they shouldn't. They're gonna lose to a team they shouldn't. There, it's out of the way.
That's all right. What about copy and paste? Let's jump to Northwestern. This is the team some people have, like, maybe coming in fifth in the Big Ten. So, do we think Northwestern's going to be, even that good?
I don't see it. Northwestern is a perennial, 7-8 win team under Pat Fitzgerald. It's Northwestern is comfortable with what they are. you know, to me. It's they are coached.
That is the best way of putting it.
It really is.
Yeah, well, that's peak what Northwestern could be. I mean, Northwestern, we're not that far removed from what they lost, what, 2 years in a row didn't win a game or something crazy?
Yeah.
That was in the 80s, I believe.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So we're not that far removed from, like, awful, you know, program-killing seasons almost.
I mean, it was basically like, you know, the guy who was there before Patrick Fitzgerald who died, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And Kevin Wilson. Kevin Wilson was the offensive coordinator on those Northwestern.
So it's a real Game of Thrones. Yeah.
Kevin, I mean, maybe if Northwestern had hired Kevin Wilson instead, who knows where they'd be. But,
all right.
Like, I mean, Northwestern is happy winning seven games. Like, they're totally comfortable. Pat Fitzgerald likes being there. I don't think he's a guy who would like having the pressure of coaching at, like, Ohio State or a Michigan, where they want you to win. I think he's happy being six wins, seven wins.
So, and you know what?
And people, if he's
forget
happy
this,
and they're happy, I'm happy. I'm happy for Northwestern. Yeah. They're happy.
You know what? People forget this. Michael Wilbon went to Northwestern.
Nobody's ever forgotten that. Here's the aggravating thing against Northwestern. I wasn't even going to bring this up. But you know every single person who ever graduated from Northwestern.
Does
they never fucking stop
son
telling
play
you.
For Northwestern basketball?
Elaine from Seinfeld? Yeah, she came to the Northwestern basketball games last year.
I think Northwestern killed my bracket last year. Let's talk about Nebraska really quick, just for a hot second. They're fucked, right? Nebraska's done, right?
I don't know if they're fucked. They're just not going to be good with this coach. But, like, I mean, they get Scott Frost in a year or two.
Nebraska's not good until they do what they need to do, and that's bring in Paul Johnson.
Well, they're not going to do that.
Yeah. They should have done the whole day temp. All right. Let's jump to the.
But we can't just move that quick because Nebraska are one of the elite programs of the
Big
Ten.
No, they're not.
They're one of the brand name programs. They were supposed.
No, they were supposed to be, but at this point, I mean, they really haven't lived up to that end of the bargain. And I mean, even before that, they weren't even a, you know. They had started slipping in the Big 12. Now, I do think the Big 10 is a little bit of a better fit for them. But I don't see their athletic program, especially at the coaching level, making, you know, the right decisions, you know, with who is going to go through and lead this program. I do think that they need to make a change in a more drastic direction. You know, and under Riley, you know, he's had some moderate, I guess, success. I think they went like 9-4 last year, but they were 9-4 with Bo Pelini. You know, I mean, it's like if that's the standard, you know, and I know that we just got done talking about this with Northwestern. If you're happy being an 8-9 win team perennially, you know, then Nebraska needs to keep going on the path that they're going on. If they're actually,
but they're clearly not happy with it.
Exactly.
They fired Pelini for it.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the point that I'm making is if you want to actually get back to the old, you know, glory days of Nebraska football, you're going to have
which
to,
will never happen.
I agree. I don't think that will ever go through. But I think that they can aspire to be something, you know, a little bit more than this, you know, especially with the program history. I think you can go through and, you know, with Nebraska. I don't think it's unexpected, you know, for their fan base to want to have, you know, at least 9-10 win seasons, you know, perennially. I think it can be achievable with the right head coach, but the problem is that unless you get that right head coach in there, you're just going to be floating around, you know, treading water at 8-5, you know, in most seasons.
I think this is the big angst for Nebraska, is that if Nebraska was in the same division as, like, Michigan and Ohio State, I think their fans would be able to cope with being an 8-win team so much. I think it'd be easier to understand. It's like, well, we moved into the Big Ten. This is their conference they've always been on top of for 50 years or whatever. We can't be shocked that we didn't just walk in and beat them. They're in the bitch-ass division. Like they're in the losers division.
I really wish that they still had the legends and leaders name so we could just precision to rename it the bitch ass division.
and the initials
spell bad, so it works out perfectly.
But like, and I think this is the number one thing that drives Nebraska people crazy. Well, when Nebraska moved from the Big 12, this is the thing people don't talk about as much. The Nebraska fans assumed they were going to walk into the Big Ten and just own it because, well, the Big Ten's nowhere near as good as the Big 12. We'll just show up and wreck their shit. Like, yeah, we can't beat Texas, but there's nobody as good as Texas in that conference. And then when they showed up and were basically the same team, that threw a lot of Nebraska fans into, like, an existential panic. But the other end of that is that the program that keeps whipping their ass every year and beating them for division titles is Wisconsin, who's basically, like, off-brand Nebraska.
Yeah, like, you know what, that's a good segue. I want to jump
it's like if Coca-Cola started getting its ass beat by Sam's Cola, and then suddenly Sam's Cola was the number one soda. Like, Coca-Cola would lose their minds. There'd be executives throwing themselves out of buildings. It would be dire. You know, right, that's I think that's the situation Nebraska finds themselves in, and they've got to find an identity because Wisconsin stole it.
No, Now, Dan, because I'm looking at Wisconsin's schedule. I think this is a one-loss team. I don't see them. If they get past BYU, I don't see another team they lose to until Michigan.
I mean,
is that crazy?
I don't think it's necessarily crazy. I can go through, because even with the tougher games that they have on the schedule, you know, if you want to even consider, you know, tougher.
There's Iowa, right?
You know, at Camp Randall. You know, even Nebraska, you know, even though that's going to be, you know, at Memorial and stuff, that's early in the season. And Purdue, Maryland, Illinois, Indiana, that's not necessarily a murderer's row.
Out of conference is BYU. I mean, if things go right for Wisconsin and, like, something goes horribly wrong for Ohio State, Wisconsin could sneak their way into the playoffs. This is a really easy schedule.
Yeah.
Like, really easy.
They could Washington their way into this.
Thing. Yeah. Because it could be, like, a total, like, Ohio State has a bus crash or a stripper controversy or something, you know.
Urban Meyer and Kevin Wilson have a fist fight before the game.
They let Urban Meyer drive the bus. He has a heart attack. Something could happen. But I look at Wisconsin, I'm like, well, damn. I mean, if you're a Wisconsin fan, I know you lose some guys on defense, but you didn't lose a whole bunch on offense, if I remember correctly.
I mean, you can set your watch by Wisconsin. Their offensive line is going to be good. They're going to run the ball down your throat. It's not going to be fun to play them. They're going to hit really hard. They're not going to be very fast. Like, there's not going to be any burners on the field. But they're going to hit you really hard. And then at the end of the game, you're going to be like, ugh, we just played a football game. Like, you know that you played in a football game when you get done playing Wisconsin.
I think that's the beauty with Wisconsin's schedule. Because literally, you don't have to play fast against BYU or Indiana. You know, like, they're really set up perfectly to win every game, but probably lose to Michigan, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be.
Michigan. They do have Michigan at home. I mean, Wisconsin could go undefeated into the Big Ten championship game. And I don't think that'd be too wild.
I've already kind of thanked Minnesota. This is the year they upset them and maybe slide into that division win championship. But I mean, obviously, I wouldn't be shocked. Like, I wouldn't do a backflip with horror that Wisconsin made it to Indianapolis again. Like they've kind of you know bought up all the hotels already. I mean, you know,
they're kind of like the Georgia of the Big Ten. Is that fair to say? Like, just this team that kind of takes advantage of a bad division half the time.
I don't think that's fair, because, like, Georgia recruits really well. Wisconsin just gets, like, Wisconsin kids, whatever the hell that means.
Yeah, and even with that, I think even in, you know, Wisconsin has found its way to go through and to consistently go through and get itself into that conference, you know, championship game within, you know, the years that it's been in existence. I'm not exactly sure, but, you know, Georgia's maybe they've made it, you know, 2-3 times maybe in the last 10 years. I'm not sure. It seems like it's either them or Florida most years.
Yeah, I mean, I think South Carolina made it once or twice.
Yeah.
Under Steve Spurrier. Let me see. Wisconsin is like dumbass Stanford. Like Stanford for idiots.
Well, there is the saying, drink Wisconsinably, so that would explain a few things.
No, when you Google Wisconsin, like literally the first thing that comes up is Wisconsin delis, which I don't know why I found that funny.
Isn't that a theme park? Wisconsin Dales?
Is it? Oh, maybe that's what it was. Maybe it didn't say deli. My brain just assumed.
Yeah, I think or, that, isn't that a water park or something?
They don't You're have Big water Ten, parks Rob. In Wisconsin.
Tell me all about Wisconsin Dell.
I almost want to say that's a Six Flags park.
Ooh,
I'm not
I love Six Flags.
Sure. No, it is the water park capital of the world, apparently.
Oh, that's the one Tony Romo goes to, if I remember correctly.
Gotcha.
No one.
I mean, Wisconsin people have like a month and a half of summer, so they have to enjoy it with all the water parks they can.
The majority of them are indoors.
It's a city in southern Wisconsin that lies in the Wisconsin River in a region of glaciered carved sandstone formations. No thanks. There were glaciers there within the past million years. Nah, I don't want to live there. but let's jump to the end of our preview. I think we all consensus Ohio State's taken would have honorary leaders conference. Division.
The Leaders Memorial.
Yes. Leaders Memorial. Are we all thinking Ohio State, Wisconsin's probably your Big Ten championship game?
I'll cape for Minnesota, but okay. I mean, I'm not. Yeah.
Minnesota wouldn't necessarily surprise me, but I do think it's a dark horse pick. I think the consensus pick is going to be for most people Ohio State and Wisconsin. That's going to remain my pick with Ohio State going over Wisconsin. I don't think it's going to be quite the 59-0 drubbing, you know, that was infamous, you know, from a couple of years ago. But I do think that, you know, Ohio State will go through and beat Wisconsin handily. I will say, you know, probably at least two touchdowns.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be shocked if Wisconsin could stay within three scores, to be honest with you. Like, I just think a lot. I mean, I think basically all the elite teams of the East are, like, head and shoulders above Wisconsin. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, or anybody who's going to play. I think regardless of who plays whom from the East will blow out the person from the West. Whether it's Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State, all those teams will probably destroy. Maybe not Penn State, Wisconsin. But besides that, everyone would probably blow a team out from the West. So, but we're all thinking Ohio State, that's our Big Ten winner this year, right? Are we all going to look dumb come November?
Who knows? We're going to be all super, super dumb when, like, Rutgers wins the Big Ten East, and then we all, like, because it's apocalypse time.
Yeah, McGregor, like, Cosell, Mayweather, Rutgers wins the national championship, and something else weird happens. And then, like, Jinder Mahal wins the WWE championship. That's, like, the three signs of the apocalypse, I think, so. Hopefully nothing weird like that's happened over in wrestling.
Well, shit.
Like, hopefully nothing weird wrestling's happening where, like, Shinsuke Nakamura, like, beat John Cena clean on an episode of SmackDown or something.
I just want you to get ready for the idea of Jinder Mahal losing the WWE title to Shinsuke Nakamura before Baron Corbin wins it. As you suddenly realize that WWE 2K has come to life. And no one's in control.
All right, but Rob, before we get out of here, anything you want to talk about, plug,
sing,
you want to do anything?
No, but say, I'll go first.
I want to hear you sing now.
Trust me, no one wants to hear me sing. I was in enough bands in high school to know that fact.
That's why you're a punk guy, right? Like, that's because you don't have to sing or be talented being punk.
Exactly, you know, it's distortion and bad mic hookups will go through and cover up a lot of flaws, let me tell you. Actually, a couple of things I do want to go through and I do want to plug. It's something that I have mentioned both times I've been on the program. It's something that's still going on. And we actually have an upcoming event this Saturday, the 12th, at the Grasskirt Kiki Room in Columbus, Ohio. It is Artist Wrestling League's first ever Tiki Takedown event. We will be going through, it's an event that's held by the Fraternal Order of Moai here in Columbus every year. Bands play. There's a lot of different art vendors, a lot of fantastic food. And for an hour, we will be performing from 5 to 6. The way I go for and describe it is it's basically art meets wrestling meets improv meets just absolute random chaos. It's a pretty good time, so if you're in the Columbus area, certainly go for and check that out. You can find videos and a bunch more information at facebook.com/artistwrestlingleague. And personally, speaking of art, I have been going for and been doing a lot of painting this year for the first time. And, God, probably about 11 years, this was like the first time I actually picked up a paintbrush on my own. And I'm now starting to go through and sell some of that stuff as well. You know, a lot of it is, you know, kind of nostalgic, cartoons, video game, retro kind of shit and whatnot. And you can find that at facebook.com/RobPaintsCrap, which I thought was a pretty accurate description for how a lot of that turns out. But the good thing is that as much as I do joke about that, a lot of the paintings have gotten a lot of compliments. I've actually sold a lot more than I thought I ever would have when I first started going through and doing this. It originally just started off as something to kind of do just as a hobby to kind of fight off anxiety and just, you know, stress and whatnot. And it's kind of just blown up on me this year. If anybody's actually going to that Tiki Takedown event, I will be vending some items. I basically have about $700 worth of paintings on me to go through, so please buy as many as you would like.
No, and I've seen these paintings. I'm not an art. The only art I hang up in my apartment is are signed pictures of former Braves players or paintings of Michael Vick, like I famously have. But this art's really cool, though. Like, if you're a fan of anything contemporary or retro, Rob's probably got a portrait, and it looks really fucking cool, to be honest.
I certainly appreciate that. Yeah. I'm going to say, probably and one of the ones that I'm actually staring at now here in the office, one of my favorite ones I did, it's a 16 by 20 piece. I don't know if I'll ever actually get around to selling it. I guess with, you know, as the Million Dollar Man said, you know, every man has its price. But I did a kind of just Mystery Science Theater 3000 kind of piece where I just threw a bunch of just, you know, sci-fi, you know, references and tropes into it that I really just love how it came out. The colors are great in it. But I've done everything from, you know, contemporary shows to older stuff. You know, old school video games and stuff. And I'm always looking for ideas and commissions, so I do go through and take that as well. Most of the stuff that I go through and sell to is, you know, relatively small. It comes hangable as is, and it's relatively cheap. You know, most things are under $50, so, you know, and even if, you know, you're wanting a piece badly enough, I'll work with you on it, so.
There we go.
That is extremely cool. And I want to say, every time you're on the show, one of my favorite parts is when you plug the Art Wrestling League, the Artist Wrestling League. I love the concept of that. If I was anywhere, I mean, if you are listening to the show and you are within 500 miles of Columbus, drive! It's awesome! You can watch the YouTubes, and they're fantastic. Like, y'all used to put some stuff on YouTube, I think you still do. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
So, like,
it's absolutely insane, and even recently, we have gone through, we've actually stepped it up to where we actually had our first injury at our first out-of-town event, where my character started off originally as a manager for El Diablo Blanco, a man who sold his soul to the devil to, I guess, become a white guy in a devil outfit, and I played his... and I played his manager, the manipulant and ambiguous Mr. Muerte. Had to do the evil cackle at least once. But unbeknownst to me, I've slowly have started actually taking more of an actual participant and wrestler role in this to now where I guess I'm officially listed as such. But my cohort, El Diablo, was involved in a match. Somebody picked him up for an airplane spin and cracked his rib. So,
a deadly airplane spin. It'll get
so
you
we
die.
Go through. We're sitting at a Swanson's drive-thru across from the tattoo parlor where we had this event. No joke. And the whole time he's sitting up in the front seat, you know, just kind of eating the sandwich. Like, you know, I'm not feeling too great. Didn't go for about 3 days and stuff, and the doctors were like, oh, yeah, you went for it and cracked your rib. You might not want to do anything physical for about 4 to 6 weeks. And the doctor asked him, you know, well, how did you get the injury? And, of course, Randy, who goes through and plays El Diablo, had no scruples about telling him what ended up happening to him, and the doctor just kind of looked at him and was just like, okay.
I guess I asked and answered.
I will say, it's like, what do you say when somebody was just like, yeah, see, I'm involved in this competitive art league, you know, where I dress up as a luchador in a devil mask, and you know, this big ginger guy also dressed up in a pink luchador mask in white overalls kind of picked me up and just, I heard something crack, you know? But yeah, definitely, you know, we do have videos on YouTube. We have, you know, videos on the Facebook page as well. The Facebook page gets updated a lot more than the YouTube page. Also, additionally, it's a series that I have started and kind of taken a little bit of a sabbatical from as I'm waiting to kind of get some better computer and video recording equipment. But for those of you who can't get enough of me and the Mr. Muerte character, there are a series of, I believe, about 8 or 9 videos for Ask Muerte Anything, where people, some real, some fake, have sent in questions for me to go through and to answer, and I give horrible advice.
I mean, you can't expect great advice from Mr. Muerte.
No,
like,
no,
he's not
going
to tell you, hey, save up for your 401k. Like, it's not. It's,
no,
I mean, you know what you're getting there.
In fact, one of my my youngest sister, her boyfriend actually went in and wrote to me, you know, tips on how to become an evil villain. And I just proceeded to just spend 5 minutes just giving him horrible life decision advice, which I'm sure that my younger sister is very appreciative of. So,
sure, sure, sure.
Love you too, Liz.
Oh, man. That's all fantastic.
All right. So that's been the Big Ten preview. Next week, we'll be back with ACC. But let's jump back to me and Dan in the Power Hour studios.
All right, and thank you, myself, for throwing back to me and Dan here in the HalfGuarded.com studios. Good preview there with Rob. That was a good, extensive look at the Big Ten. We kind of got a slice of life from the Midwest there. Nice for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Hey, some flyover country. Trump country, if you will.
I mean, yes, the Midwest is Trump country. There's no doubt about it.
So, Dan, before we get out of here, I've got a fuck you of the week. This is going to be a serious one, but I don't know if you saw this news today. High school football player died from a training drill when
Jesus.
A log hit him on the head, killed him.
What?
Yeah, it's some drill the U.S. Marines use, the fucking Marines, where you carry a log and run, and essentially the log hit a kid in the head. Why the fuck is a high school football team doing a drill that Marines, like, literally the toughest people in the fucking army use? Like, what's the fun in that? How's that helping you become a better football player or just a better all-around young adult or young man?
Well, some guy with a very small penis read on the internet that this is what the Marines do, and he thought, my boy's going to be just like Byron.
Yeah, it's...
And then tragedy strikes.
And in my opinion, this guy needs to be fired and pressed with charges. Not go to jail, but his career needs to be ruined over something like this. You might say that's harsh, but a little boy's, like a 16 or 17-year-old boy's dead. Because this coach couldn't have his players run stadiums like a normal football coach.
When you're put in charge of minors and one of them dies, yeah, you should probably be looking at jail time.
Yeah. And even though jail time, you have hard probation, and your life...
You have fucked up in a major way.
And your life is going to be derailed, and if not ruined, then derailed for a couple of years. I think that's fair, and especially with a sport like football that's already super dangerous. And we've already had, I think 5 or 6 deaths this year, if you count the college program. I think 2 of those are from heat stroke. I think another one's from a beer condition.
Common.
Yeah. So another, you know, not fun summer for football, but this is just what happens. It's just any sport in the summer, you're going to have heat stroke and weird things.
Yeah, and you never know, you know, especially with young adults who may not have been to the doctor as much, you never know that they have, like, some kind of, you know, health, birth defect, health defect, and, you know, then something tragic happens.
Yeah.
When you're talking about a coach making his players carry logs around, that is as preventable as anything in the, that could possibly be.
Yeah. Like, so that's my fuck you. And fuck you to any coach who wants to take football as seriously as the armed forces. It's not. It's a fucking game. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of stuff hard about it that you can character build. I do believe in the power of football, Dan, for, like, young kids. I mean, it kind of helped me get my life straight when I was a dumb teenager. But there's ways you can do that without copying people who are being trained to kill people in the desert. End of the day, it's a game, and you got to remember that. And if you're, it doesn't even help you be a better football player. There's a way to get strength without carrying a goddamn log.
Yeah, and I think you should never lose track of the fact that these are kids you're coaching. Kids. The point is to help them get to the next stage of their life, not put them in danger of not making it to tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like, if anything you're having them do threatens their physical well-being to that degree, you should not do
it. No, and only that.
I can't believe we have to say that.
If you even consider that, you need to get out of coaching. That's not what youth or high school coaching is about at any level. Like, yeah, it is about winning because it's sports, but it's not about that. It's a little bit deeper than that. And, yeah, you're supposed to win, but I think the end goal is to mold, you know, teenagers into young adults who can succeed in the world. Because that's the power of sports. And we've seen football, Dan, do a lot of great things for a lot of kids who may have ended up dead, you know, or in gangs or whatever. So it can be a sport used for good. But when you see people use it for bad, they should be condemned and rode out of town on the rail, in my opinion.
And let's just hope he doesn't get hired by whatever that weird school is that just hired Dave Bliss to be their basketball coach.
Him. Like, it's probably too why I get so mad about the Penn State situation, Dan, because it's, when football is used for evil, it's just the worst thing in the world, because we can do a lot of good with this wonderful sport. It's just sickening. So, maybe on that note.
Man,
we'll be back next week with ACC previews, and hopefully a little bit better high-spirited.
Yes, and hopefully nothing horrid happens. But on that note, we say goodbye and we play the music, Jason.